Well, what were some of the premiums offered by Captain Midnight and the sponsor, Ovaltine?
Well, the items that we relate most to Captain Midnight were the decoders. There were 7 Captain Midnight decoders put out from 1941 to 1949, with 1943 and 1944 being omitted because of a shortage of metals during the war years. And these were varied quite a bit in their design. Most of them were of a badge nature, but there was a whistle and had the decoder on the side of the whistle. Each one of these decoders came with very colorful manuals, varying in number of pages from 8 to 16, all in full color. And normally you got the decoder and the manual, which was a guide on how to operate the decoder, secret signs that you could use to identify yourself to other secret squadron members. Just insights on the Captain Midnight characters and the Captain Midnight programs, and of course with plugs for Ovaltine. There were many other Captain Midnight premiums offered. There was a periscope, or at least 2 different periscopes that I know about. There were several drinking mugs and variations of the drinking mugs. Some were shake-up mugs, some were just plain mugs. And whatever they could think of. They were quite imaginative in those days, I think, in what they would offer the youngsters. There was, of course, Captain Midnight comic books, which were not related to the show itself. It was almost an entirely different character. But the badges, the premiums that were decoders are what we probably remember best and relate best to the Captain Midnight show.
What was the very first Captain Midnight premium?
I'm not sure of the history, and I don't think nobody has really kind of pinned it down, but Captain Midnight really started not as an Ovaltine, I can't think of what you would call it, but Ovaltine picked it up after it had been on the air for at least a year, and mm-hmm. Skelly Gas had offered at least 3 different sets of premiums before Ovaltine came in on the scene. One was a pair of wings, which says Captain Midnight Flight Commander, and then said Skelly underneath. These are quite common, and of course, were items that were not you didn't have to send in for. You went into the gas station and picked these up. There was a medallion of membership, which featured Captain Midnight and members of the secret squadron: Joyce, Ichabod, Mudd, and Chuck Ramsey. Right. And then the third item was a set of pictures. I think there was at least 3 in the set: Captain Midnight, Chuck Ramsey, and Joyce. These were all items that you picked up at Skelly gas stations. And then, of course, Ovaltine picked it up, and I imagine the first item was a 1941 Captain Midnight decoder. And, of course, each year they followed after that. And this was in the footsteps of Little Orphan Annie, where they offered decoders.
Mm-hmm. Did once they came in with the drinking mugs and the shake-up mugs, did that just put an end to the decoders at that point?
No, they were semi. Each year, I think they put out a mug, too, or offered the mug over the air. They also did this during the TV series. They offered decoders and mugs at this time. Most of these things are, of course, quite collectible. I have most of them in my collection. The manuals are very colorful and hard to come by. The decoders are a little bit more common, especially the Orphan Annie decoders.
Mm-hmm. When was Captain Midnight on television?
I'm not, again, sure of the date, but I believe they started around 51 or 52 with Richard Webb playing the part of Captain Midnight. And it was only a fair to middling series. It was a film series.
Actually, what happened on that, Joe, wasn't didn't Ovaltine decide that they didn't want Captain Midnight to be on such a bad series, and they did some kind of a technical change?
The series was just so bad that they changed it to Jet Jackson. And I don't know who took over the sponsorship, if anybody. It may have been syndicated to various local stations. They called it Jet Jackson, and they would dub in the name Jet Jackson and Captain Midnight, or what it was actually what they were saying. And it was quite obvious. I remember this as a kid, and I just recently happened to see a Jet Jackson show, and it was, again, it was a bad show, and it was quite obvious that it was being dubbed in. But Richard Webb made a very good Captain Midnight. It's just unfortunate that it was so poorly written.
Mm-hmm. It seems interesting that if it was, in fact, Ovaltine who wanted to preserve the Captain Midnight image, that they were so disappointed in the show that they just had to change it from Captain Midnight to something else, and obviously it must have just run as Jed Jackson to fulfill a contract or something.
Possibly,
like that.
Yeah. I guess there was money involved too.
Speaking of money, now what did it cost to get one of those Captain Midnight premiums? A 1941 decoder, for example.
Originally a dime, and then they had to boost the price toward the end. I think the 48 and 49 items ran a quarter, plus the Ovaltine lid, of course.
Yeah.
Another thing too is that there were additional premiums offered in the manuals. These are even rarer and harder to get. There were special rings, special flight commander medallions, and these were offered as additional premiums in the manual. When you obtain the manual, if you wanted to go a little further, you can ask for or send in an additional dime and Ovaltine lid for these items.
Well, now 25 and 30 years later, what are these premiums worth? You're a collector and a curator, so to speak. What are they worth? What would you pay for a good Captain Midnight premium in real good condition, mint condition?
It would
for
depend
example.
On what it is. It's the most I paid for a single item, believe it or not, was not the radio Captain Midnight, but the TV Captain Midnight, which they also offered manuals. I paid for a 1957 Captain Midnight manual, $45, and because it is a rarer item. The most I ever sold a Captain Midnight item for, the first 1941 manual, I sold for $50, plus I got some trade items on top of it, because the fellow wanted it pretty bad. The decoders average out about $25 a piece in value.
If there's someone out there with a Captain Midnight decoder in their hall closet, for example, it's worth some money. It's probably worth a lot more from a personal nostalgic value, though, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yes, definitely. They were nice items. I don't think there's anything to compare with them today. And if they were to try and duplicate the item, I'm sure, say, if Ovaltine decided to put out a very similar, say, a duplicate of the 1949 item, it would cost them $2 or $3 just to duplicate it, because they're you know, even though they were bronze, cast in bronze, they're still nicely done with a lot of detail.
Captain Midnight, of course, was never to be replaced, and none of the decoders should be replaced, and we can't replace you with anything for joining us on our little chat about decoders. And we can only go from here to more Captain Midnight.
Okay.
The Adventures of Charlie Chan, The Curious Ride of the Sea Witch. This is Chuck Shaden from Chicago, when radio was radio. We've got a couple of unusual radio adventures this time out. Charlie Chan and Hopalong Cassidy. Not many similarities, a lot of differences between Charlie and Hoppy, but to define some of those similarities and, of course, some of the differences, we've invited Joe Sarno, the proprietor of Chicago's Nostalgia Shop, to visit us to talk about some of those things. Joe, welcome to our program, and what are some of the similarities between Charlie Chan and Hopalong Cassidy?
Both Charlie and Hoppy began as characters in books. The first Charlie Chan book was written by Earl Dare Biggers in 1925. Hopalong Cassidy was written by Clarence E. Mulford in 1910. They hit their stride in the movies, with the first Charlie Chan movie being made in 1931, and Hoppy, as played by Bill Boyd, William Boyd. The first Hoppy movie was made in 1935. Of course, Hoppy's primary success began in TV when the movies were replayed in 1948, 49, 50. Both Hoppy and Charlie Chan were, in a sense, father figures. Charlie Chan having always his number one son, his number two son, and another sidekick would be Mantan Moreland as the black humor interest. With Hopalong Cassidy, he had James Ellison playing the part of Johnny, or Johnny Nelson, and humor was provided by Gabby Hayes and later by Andy Clyde. So each of them, in a sense, had two sidekicks. I think these are the primary similarities. In a sense, a similarity would be the fact that there were 44 Charlie Chan features made. There were 66 Hopalong Cassidy features.
My goodness, didn't realize there was quite that
many Charlie Chan features.
There was actually 47. There were three silents, mm-hmm. but I'm just counting these sound features.
Charlie Chan was not on radio an awfully long time. Leon Janning was the number one son, and Charlie was at various times played by Walter Connolly, Ed Begley, and Santos Ortega. Hopalong Cassidy was always played on radio and in movies and on TV by William Boyd, and Andy Clyde was California.
On the radio series.
On radio, mm-hmm. right. And that radio series began over Mutual in 1949.
How long did it last?
Oh, it lasted to the middle 50s, mm-hmm. about the mid-50s. And it was with the popularity of the TV, resurrection of Hoppy movies on
now,
this TV.
This is a revelation to me that Hoppy was on radio.
Yeah, he was. And we have a good one coming up in just a little bit. But I want to ask about the premiums and things like that. We know Captain Midnight decoders and Superman pep pins and all the other things like that. What about Hoppy and Charlie Chan? Were there any premiums offered to listeners or viewers or whatever?
On Charlie Chan, I'm fairly certain there was not. Charlie, of course, was attended more for an adult listening audience, and probably the Shadow and the Green Hornet were the only adult type programs that ever offered any premiums. Charlie Chan comic books, comic strips, and Big Little books were available to children. As far as Hoppy was concerned, of course, as soon as in the late 40s, as soon as Hoppy's fame began to take off, there was just tons and tons of Hopalong Cassidy toys put on the market. And, of course, many of these might even be found today on some shelves in some obscure stores here and there. As far as toys were concerned, in my own collection, I have playing cards, cowgirl outfit. I have a ring, a knife, fork, spoon, flashlight. I have over 200 trading cards, binoculars, a ring toss game, several coloring books, a paint set where the little figures are cut out. The paint actually is cut out in little figures of Indians and cowboys, stuff like that. The paint itself, right, are actually designed. I never saw anything quite like it before. I have two different wristwatches, a drinking mug, a six-shooter, spurs, comic strips, a money clip, some money, and Hopalong Cassidy money with Hoppy's picture where Washington's picture should be.
And he's a father figure of our country.
Yes, I mean, in a sense he was too. This is he was a father figure, uh-huh. I think, to all of us. A record, two record sets with pictures of Hoppy's in there, mm-hmm. and probably the only premium, actual premium that was offered over the air was a newspaper, Hopalong Cassidy newspaper called the Trooper News, which you sent in for through Butternut Bread, and which enabled you to join Hoppy's Troopers and get a membership card and stuff like this.
Now, that was the TV.
This was TV.
And it was the bread company that was sponsoring the reruns of the Hoppy movies, huh?
That's correct.
Right. Yeah. You mentioned the Hopalong Cassidy ring. What did that look like? Could you describe it?
It looks like silver. It was probably silver plated and just had a little embossed figure of mm-hmm. Hopalong Cassidy's face on the top.
And the playing cards, were they regular deck of 52
right.
playing cards?
52 playing cards with a picture of Hoppy on the back. Very nice and blue, very kind of sophisticated. I think that was designed for adults, not children.
Mm-hmm. Was Hopalong Cassidy ever, did he ever have a girlfriend?
As far as I know, no. Hoppy had a great concern for his role, and of course, Bill Boyd, as far as he was concerned, he was Hopalong Cassidy. Mm-hmm. And he had an idealistic feeling for what his character should be and what it should mean to children. And so he never had a girlfriend. I don't think he really, you know, he had a love for his horse either. He was played a certain role. He was a father image. He was a personification of justice on the range. And never had a girlfriend, as far as I know. The romance interest was usually provided by the character of Johnny, as played by James Ellison, and Lucky Jenkins, as played by Russell mm-hmm. Hayden. Hopalong, he was similar to Tom Mix in this thing. Tom Mix also had a great concern for the children. They realized, both Tom Mix and Hoppy realized that they were to be looked on and they would be hero worshipped by children. And so they had a great feeling for what they were responsibility, which I don't think you have today by a lot of your stars, a lot of people who are in show business.
Hoppy didn't sing either, did he?
No, he didn't, although I understand that Bill Boyd did possess a fairly adequate singing voice. But as far as I know, he never sang.
Here's a cowboy hero who didn't sing,
right?
Who didn't have a girlfriend, and who didn't particularly have a great love for his horse.
No, I don't think so. And he felt that there were certain bounds horses were. He had a good horse, but he didn't use it like Roy Rogers used Trigger, and that he would go to fetch the sheriff or break the bounds that bound his hands or something like that.
What was the name of Hoppy's horse?
Topper.
Topper.
Right.
Well, you've topped us out tonight, and we appreciate your being here with us to share some good information about both Charlie Chan and Hopalong Cassidy. Proprietor of the Nostalgia Shop in Chicago, Joe Sarno, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And let's tune in now to Hopalong Cassidy and the Case of the Last Word.